And it's 9 o'clock, and you're tuned to WOWD LP Tacoma Park.
You, who are on the road, must have a code that you can live by. And so, become yourself, because the past is just a goodbye. Teach your children well, their father's hell did slowly go by. And feed them on your dreams, the one they picked, the one you know by. Don't you ever ask them why, if they told you you would cry. So just look at them and sigh, and know they love you.
Of tender years, I know the fears that your elders grew by. And so please help them with your youth. They seek the truth before they can die.
Teach your parents well, their children's hell will slowly go by. And feed them on your dreams, the one they picked, the one you know by. Don't you ever ask them why, if they told you you would cry. So just look at them and sigh,
everyone. This is Sheila Blake, and I'm here for the Art as Experience radio show on WOWD 94.3 FM Tacoma Park. We come to you every other Saturday, 9 a.m., rain or shine, and talk about art. Tom Zanakis, my normal radio partner, is on vacation, so I have with me today my husband, Peter Blake. He's been on our show before, but he's our mostly silent third partner in this enterprise, and today he's a guest on the show.
Thank you, Sheila. Our show is based in freedom of discovery, and freedom to learn, freedom to react personally in your own free self, and freedom to speak your mind. So today we'll discuss an artist, a renowned artist, that's given us problems. But we love thinking and talking about art, and you can't love everyone that's good. I know you still don't like Picasso, right?
True.
And for a while there, you had your doubts about Manet.
Yeah, occasionally.
But then you came to appreciate him. So no matter what the fervent supporters say, you've got to find your own way.
Well, Sally Mann is a photographer. She's been known all over the world. She had an amazing kind of debut 40 years ago when she showed pictures of her family in a collection of photographs. And she lives in the South. She lives in the Shenandoah Valley. And her photographs are of the surrounding hills, of her children, of her travels through the South. And she has a new collection called 1,000 Crossings, which just ended at the National Gallery Peter and I have seen her work over the years. We both remember an exhibit at the Corcoran about 10 years ago titled What Remains, and it was a collection of pictures of decomposing bodies which were discovered and investigated by the police.
Right. Those photographs were commissioned by the Corcoran Gallery in the spirit of experimentation, since there was absolutely no commercial potential. No one would buy those photographs to put on their walls. And they're all owned by the Corcoran. Used to be owned by the Corcoran and now by the National Gallery.
Well, this show, A Thousand Crossings, is Sally Mann's homage to the American South. It's born out of her love, respect, passion, and it's fraught with a complex history of the past. It's going to travel to the Peabody SX Museum in Salem, Massachusetts, at the J. Paul Getty Museum in Los Angeles, the Museum of Fine Arts in Houston, the Jus de Paume in Paris, and the High Museum of Art in Atlanta. So, of course, if you're able to, go see the exhibit. But even though you can't get the full impact of these photographs, you can go online and look on our Facebook page, Artist Experience Facebook page, and you could see what we've put there, the photographs that we're talking about, and or just look up Sally Mann and you'll see a lot of photographs there. We hope that you, as we have, will find a trove of beauty in questioning.
And there are no decomposing bodies in this show.
No, there aren't. So these are black and white photographs. There is a special impact of black and white photography. It has not only to do with the subject, which is part of it because a photograph is always of something, but it's about the range of value, the contrast, the composition, the ability of the viewer to look into the darkness and the light and see what's there and imagine what's not there. The photographers who came before her, Ansel Adams, Edward Weston, there was also a book, The Family of Man, that came out in the 50s, which was a groundbreaking book of photographs, and it introduced the American public to the power of black and white photography. I'm going to describe one of Sally Mann's photographs. It's called Deep South, Valentine, Windsor. And it's a photograph of massive columns crumbling like ancient ruins, and it's probably from a plantation manager. A plantation manor. It's in the woods, enveloped by overgrowth of vines, which frame the top of the photograph. The featureless light of the bright sky pushes forward underneath the vines, and in the sky is a small heart-shaped leaf, which is the Valentine. We feel as though we've just discovered this place, and as we look more, there's an unearthly glow from the structures. And behind the structures is a cabin, maybe slave quarters, much smaller than the columns. The whole thing is a soft focus atmosphere due to the antique camera and the flaws in the lens that make it seem as though the photo is antique. Adding some floating mystery into the atmosphere, it brings time and history.
Yes, the floating mystery. Sally Mann is creating a cosmos. It's not the documentary realism of her predecessors in black and white photography. In those photographs, you were almost looking through a window at reality, the cliffs of Yosemite, for example. With Sally Mann, you've arrived at some shore, you step out and you're looking into a dream. That's why I call it a cosmos. It's a parallel world, parallel to our real world, that you, the viewer, have been granted access to, and it's got characters in it and energies of moral energies. So let's describe the photograph Easter Dress.
Okay, so Easter Dress is a landscape in the hills. It's morning, and the fog is just slowly lifting. They're on the farm. There's some kind of play going on. Now, what we know already about Sally Mann is that she's photographed her children until they were about 10 years old. And they were really part of her work, which we're going to discuss. But there's In the center of this photograph is a young girl, her daughter Jessie, and she's in a white dress, standing in the grass, holding out her skirts, looking straight at the camera. Behind her, a little bit to the right, is a small girl in a shabby white pinafore, and she's gathering flowers. The two girls are held in a luminous triangle of light, which is barely noticeable, with an apex that glints on the wires above and descends through a solitary tree in the fields beyond. Around them are three ambiguously ominous figures. On the right, her son, Emmett, is shadowy in a black hooded ninja costume, holding onto the fence and pointing to something off screen. And way over on the left is an old man in a white shirt, and he's kind of emerging from the trees, and he's facing the camera with a worried expression. He's looking as if he might be coming to chase the kids, or he could be trying to get out of the picture, but it's weird and it's ominous. And then there's an animal, probably a dog, blurred by his motion in a miniature tornado. Hanging on the clothesline between the children and the old man is a white nightgown, and it's glowing. All these figures are lined up across the picture, and the light glows in their hair and through the white gauzy clothes. Not one of Sally Mann's pictures is on a sunny day. And Sally Mann did her shooting in the summer for the most part and did the printing in the winter months.
Yes, it's a cloudy day, and yet the light shines through the hair of the people, making them into halos. And there's a light glowing out of the landscape. This is all a product of her technique. I think it probably helps at some point, maybe first, to read the photograph, not as a portrait. The children and the grandfather figure and the dog are more like sprites or demons, beings that have sprung out of the landscape. Then the fact that they are the artist's family becomes a secondary reading that complicates our emotional reaction. Continuing in this secondary reading, we see in this photo and in others in the series, taken at the family cabin in the summer, that the family lives a life of freedom and art, not of propriety. In the rural South, there's a free spirit somewhat resembling a commune. But unlike a commune, which has a spiritual ambition, there's a tension underneath, an electric charge, an unfamiliarity, a deliberate challenge to the viewer. You don't get the sense of a belief in righteous behavior like there might be in the commune. There's something different about this family, something that has nothing to do with the church. But what is that spirit? Is it something that we want to see? Is it valuable or wise, generous, or is it wrong somehow? Is it exploitative? These are the themes we'll be exploring today.
Mm-hmm. Well, Sally Mann, she's 67 years old now. She was born in Lexington, Virginia, which is in the southwestern part of the state in the Shenandoah Valley. Her mother was there with the family, but she left the raising of her children mostly to Virginia Carter, who is the black woman who had six children of her own and worked for Sally's family for many years. Her father was a physician who moved to Lexington from Texas. When Sally was 16, her father gave her a large format camera with no explanation or instructions, and she fell intensely in love with taking pictures. So she went to boarding school and she took up photography there, where she claims that her motive was to be alone in the dark room with her boyfriend. She went to Bennington College, she studied literature, and she took a class in photography. Then she went to Hollins College, where she got her master's degree in writing. She took numerous photography workshops, learning different approaches, concepts, and techniques, and she got a job working as a photographer at Washington and Lee College in Lexington, where she met and married Larry Mann. In 1973, while she was working at Washington Lee, she discovered a trove of 7,500 glass plate negatives by the 19th century Civil War photographer Michael Miley. For 2 years, she carefully cleaned and cataloged these images of war, portraits, buildings, and the streets of Lexington, the rivers and the hills around the village. She found a photo of a remote stretch of river where Sally had spent much of her childhood. They were made by a photographic process called collodion. Instead of film, glass plates were coated with a sticky substance called collodion and worked in complete darkness. They were sensitized with silver nitrate. Sally Mann adopted this process. Most of the photographs in this show are silver collodion.
She's lived with her husband and three children in the rural landscape of the Shenandoah Valley, on the land where she herself grew up. It's a different landscape from New England, say. It's specific, hardscrabble, idyllic, foreboding, Appalachian beauty. The beauty of rolling hills, barbed wire fence, old pickup trucks, fog, hollows, small clabbered churches. Inside the churches, we can imagine tambourines and speaking in tongues. And down by the river, we can imagine death. Sally realized that being at home and taking care of her children was as rich a subject for her art as traveling anywhere else. Like the poet William Carlos Williams, she's decided to use the local as the basis of her art. She lives on the land that she grew up on and creates art that starts from her complex, conflicted, and fascinated responses to the land and its history of slavery, Jim Crow, family, poverty, natural beauty, and Christianity.
So Sally Mann is perhaps best known for her third collection, Immediate Family, which was first exhibited in 1990, and it just burst into the world and to her immediate success. The book consists of 65 black and white photographs of her three children, all under the age of 10. Many of the pictures were taken at the family's remote summer cabin along the river, where the children played and swam naked. Sally herself as a child wouldn't put on a stitch of clothing unless she absolutely had to, and her kids were brought up the same way. So many of the pictures explore typical childhood themes like skinny dipping, reading the funnies, dressing up, vamping, napping, playing board games, but others touch on darker themes such as insecurity, loneliness, injury, sexuality, and death. The controversy on this is reliefs of these photographs was intense, including accusations of child pornography and of contrived fiction. Mann says that before the book was published, the kids decided which photos they wanted in the book. She also arranged for them to talk to a psychologist and arranged that the book wouldn't be sold in the area that they lived in. It seems that the nudity was the main controversy. This work was a real collaboration. The kids all participated in the setting up of the poses and learned to give Sally what she was looking for. It was really a family business. And the children say that they were very proud of that, that they were proud to be part of this, and they would think of things for photographs. So these photographs are a combination of spontaneous and carefully arranged moments of childhood repose and revealing sometimes unnerving imaginative play. What the outraged critics missed was the patient devotion and the delighted complicity of her son and daughters in so many of the solemn or playful events.
So what do you think?
Oh, boy. You know, when I first saw these photographs, I really didn't like them. But that's where I started. So, of course, I don't agree with the charge of pornography. I think that's ridiculous. But I have had some kind of true aversion and suspicion of his work. So I thought I'd love to use this show to explore that.
Okay, go ahead.
All right. Well, I see this weird horror film aspect, and that's consistent through all of her work. My questioning of her work doesn't have to do with nudity, but that the kids were part of the work, and they didn't really have a choice, or they didn't know they had a choice. They were proud of their mother and proud to be part of her work, but to always be looked at, to always be photographed, it gives us self-consciousness to their childhood. That's the opposite of innocence. I've seen this in kids that are being constantly photographed by their parents, with clothes or not. When I look at the pictures, I see an invasion of privacy.
Okay. Yeah, so what we're saying, we're free to react. I draw a distinction that we don't know this family, so we cannot confidently judge the ethics of the artist, but it brings up issues. We're free to react to the art, and the art brings up issues in the modern world about the care of children.
Look, these are not snapshots. They may appear to be snapshots because sometimes there's movement, and sometimes the way things are set up seems to be random, but as you look more at them, they're really very carefully crafted, and often the children posed many times to get just the right shot. So I think I'm weirded out as much by the family business aspect of anything else, that there is no privacy. The kids are always on view and ready to be photographed.
Okay, a couple of issues. Well, first of all, are they good photographs? And what does that mean? We're confronted with black and white photos that are not conventionally beautiful, but in the catalog, in several essays by quite excellent writers, they insist that the pictures are hauntingly beautiful. So we're challenged to find the beauty, learn to read these works.
Yeah, I saw those words, hauntingly beautiful, as I was going through the material for this show. It comes up so often. So let's give a little time to her technique and to the main body of pictures in this exhibition. So Sally Mann turned away from the documentary realism of, say, Ansel Adams, and she inserted herself between the subject and the photograph. When we see photographs, I think we just accept them. We accept them as reality because the camera doesn't lie and all kinds of things that, you know, and good and bad. But we do accept that that's the way it is. But in this case, Sally Mann used long exposures, sometimes 20 minutes, and discovered that the light seemed to emanate from the objects with those long exposures and not be reflected off of them. So I think we have to sort of put this into another category of these photographs are almost paintings in many ways. And I think as she went on with her work into the work in this show, she used a lot of techniques that sort of split the difference between photographs and paintings.
Yeah, she's making forays into abstraction.
Yes, very much. And in fact, I saw a painting by her daughter who it's very much like a photograph of Sally Mann's as a painting. Mm-hmm. So these things really overlap. Sally Mann uses an antique view camera from the early 1890s. These cameras have wooden frames, accordion-like bellows, and long lenses made out of brass held together by tape that has mold growing inside. This sort of camera, when used with vintage lenses, softens the light, which makes the pictures appear timeless. She discovered a trove of old camera lenses, and she realized that the flaws, the imperfections, the scratches, the mold, and whatever else was in them, they modify and cover the image so that it lends a mystery and that quality to the picture of you're not quite sure what you're seeing and if you look closely, is this an image that appeared in the photograph or is it some gunk on the lens? But she uses it very well.
Right, so there's a lot of literary aim in these photographs. A lot of poetic, evocative writing by man and by people who write about her. The landscapes are meant to bring up lots of meditation. So here's some examples from Sally Mann's writings. I'll quote. Flannery O'Connor said the South is Christ-haunted, but I say it's death-haunted. The pictures I took on those awestruck, heart-breaking trips down south were pegged to the familiar corner posts of my conscious being. Memory, loss, time, and love. The repertoire of the Southern artist has long included place, the past, family, death, and dosages of romance that would be fatal to most contemporary artists. But the stage on which these are played out is always the Southern landscape, terrible in its beauty, in its indifference. The pictures I wanted to take were about the rivers of blood, of tears, and of sweat that Africans poured into the dark soul of their thankless new home. I was looking for images of the dead as they are revealed in the land and in its adamant, essential renewal. One death in particular had haunted me since childhood, that of Emmett Till, which took place in Maud Clay's home territory. On my way there, I traced the route his murderers had taken in his last hours, beginning with the fateful and possibly apocryphal Wolf Whistle in Money, Mississippi, passing along the Tallahatchie River, and winding upon a balmy, serenely yellowish afternoon at the very boat lock from which 14-year-old Emmett was heaved into the river, naked, blinded, beaten, a cotton gin fan lashed with barbed wire to his neck.
7 feet. 7 feet. Barren, strange fruit. Blood on the leaves. And blood at the roots. Black bodies swinging in the southern breeze. Strange fruit hanging from the poplar trees. Pastoral scene of the gallant South. Them big bulging eyes and the twisted mouth. 7 feet. Scent of magnolia. Clean and fresh. Then the sudden smell of burning flesh. Here is a fruit. For the crows to pluck. For the rain to gather. For the wind to suck. For the sun to rot.
So we're back. This is Sheila Blake for the Artist Experience Radio Show at WOWDLP Tacoma Park. We're going to get back to Sally Mann, who she was. Quite a privileged Southern girl who her parents were quite liberal. Her mother was an activist for civil rights, and yet they depended on Gigi Carter, who worked for their family most of her life. And her family took her for granted in a way that Sally has a lot of remorse and guilt about. She's a beautiful woman, and nobody ever saw that discrepancy. And then when Sally went to college and she got a burst of civil rights, she came home and she gave a ride to an African-American boy from the town. She gave him a ride out somewhere where he needed to be. And she said to Gigi, "Oh, I gave this kid a ride." And Gigi got furious with her. And she said, "Listen to me. You never give a ride to a black boy. You never do that." And Sally didn't know if that's because she felt that put her in danger or because it put the boy in danger. And so that was one of the difficult, complex lessons. So her own children, Sally's own children, are named after Emmett Till and Virginia Carter, who was Gigi. When I moved to the South, I was given a book, Let Us Now Praise Famous Men by James Agee and Walker Evans. It's one of the most powerful books I've ever known. James Agee was a young writer and Walker Evans was a photographer, and they were sent by Fortune magazine to the South to document the tenant farmers in the Depression. It was in 1926, and the tenants lived on shacks, and just the most hardscrabble life. And the photographs from that time are really exceptional. And so when we moved to the South, we lived in a cabin on a tobacco farm and with tenant farmers, and my eyes were open. The tenants bought food at the family store. They were always in debt. And this was 1964. I knew nothing. It wasn't just the South, but it was real. And when I asked the landlord if he had modern machinery, he said, "No, we have niggers." So I can see how Sally Mann felt when the civil rights movement hit. Even though her mother was a progressive woman and very much involved in the civil rights movement, and her father a physician taking care of people, these are things that never can be righted. The exploitation of Gigi, it stays with her today. So the pictures that are the body of this exhibit are the large, dark landscapes. Some of them are 3 feet by 4 feet. And they also have all the imperfections of the lenses and the drama of peering into the darkness. She wants us to think about what's under that dark work, that dark earth. There are battlefields of the Civil War, Antietam, Manassas, Fredericksburg, and Cold Harbor. In these fields are the blood and the bones underneath. And these pictures are certainly strengthened by the writing of Sally Mann's writing. But without that, they're pretty simple in their composition. You're looking into the blackness and imagining a lot. Dawn's breaking. The battle is about to begin. The filmy lenses are lending a quality of painting to these prints, sometimes like force fields, cyclones coming out of the earth, a hard rain falling. The painter and sculptor Anselm Kiefer has very large evocative works of what might be seen as the devastation from a nuclear war, the end of the earth. But in Mann's photographs, The grass and trees cover the blood and death of the past, and she uses these effects to dredge them up. There's one of Antietam called Black Sun. The field and the sun are black, and the sky is bright at the horizon, and the cloudy forms above have ghosts or angels rising in the sky.
Yes, these photographs of the battlefields, they really are looking into cosmos. You can look into them and see all sorts of strange and shadowy, energetic vortexes, shall we say, emerging out of the land. But you're right, there is a lot of literary content in the pictures. In the catalog, there's a passage from Joan Didion about New Orleans, quoted by Hilton Owls as the epigraph to his piece about man. I'll quote that. "The air is heavy with sex and death, not violent death, but death by decay, overripeness, rotting, death by drowning, suffocation, fever of an unknown etiology. The place is physically dark. Dark like the negative of a photograph, dark like an X-ray. The atmosphere absorbs its own light, never reflects light, but sucks it in until random objects glow with a morbid luminescence." The reason this passage was in the book, although Joan Didion was writing about New Orleans in this passage, is that it uncannily describes Sally Mann's pictures.
Well, part of this body of work is a series called the Blackwater series. It's a series of tintypes. They're much smaller, 8 inches by 10 inches. And the tintype was what was used to document the Civil War, documenting the individual soldier and horrific battle scenes. It captured scenes from the Wild West, as it was easy to produce by itinerant photographers who were working out of covered wagons, and they could bring the plates with them. The tintype is emulsion on a metal plate. It's noteworthy that Mann has been using the same camera that was given to her when she and Larry picked up a man at the bus station and let him spend the night at their home. He told her that he was going to send her a camera. And he did. And this is the camera she's used all this time. She's broken through the limitations of the techniques of the early photographs. And the tintype is part of that. So although Mann has said that she never took a photography course or even read a book on photography, she also said she borrows shamelessly. It's unavoidable. Everything we see is stored somewhere in our memory. And when we're working, these images rise to the surface. It's impossible for us to sort it out, and we shouldn't. But I have to say, the quality of these tintypes is very much like the Blair Witch Project, which was a faux supernatural documentary horror movie made in 1999. It's shot in Maryland in black and white about three film students who disappeared in a rotting house in the tangle of woods. The whole movie is meant to scare you. And there's a way that the picture was shot with a handheld camera shaky. And there's a look to the whole film that has very similar murkiness and swampiness as those black water pictures. They really do. And I sort of wonder, did Sally Mann see the Blair Witch Project? Or was it just a coincidence? It could have been either. But the main thing about these photographs is not their subject at all, because you often can't even find out what the subject was. It's sort of swampiness, trees, dead trees, some sort of imagery of crosses. But the whole thing is the mood. That's the subject of the picture.
Yeah, these Blackwater pictures, that is the mood. There is a common element. Both Sally Mann and the horror film director are looking for how to make a common landscape look creepy. You can see plenty of this otherworldly, disturbing spirit in the family photographs also. And about that comment, that, you know, I'm sure she did say at some point denying that she took photography courses or emphasizing her originality. And that's what people do. I mean, but obviously that's not true. She took many, many photography courses and had deep friendships with photographers and talked about it with them and worked on. She's a very ambitious artist, and I'm sure she works constantly, reads constantly, discusses technique with lots of people.
Yeah, she must. One of the things that was said in this book about her was that because she was such a serious photographer, she wanted to live in New York, where the main arts is, but it took her a while, and she wanted a family, and it took her a while to figure out that she could really make her work on the farm where she lived. But the ambition was always there, and there's nothing wrong with that, but you have to see that in this body of work.
No, there's nothing. I mean, you can't be a great artist without ambition.
No, that's true. So the painter Andrew Wyeth, I don't know if any of you have seen his paintings. There was an exhibit at the National Gallery a couple of years ago, and he has the same kind of psychodrama going on through all of his work. Old barns and tattered curtains and rusty pails and worn-out farm people. He says it over and over, and so many people love his work. In that retrospective in Washington a couple of years ago, I went twice, and at exactly in the same moment, halfway through the show, I just had to get out of there and go get a cup of coffee. And then I said, well, I'm going to go again, and I went back to the show, and at the same point in the show, I suddenly had to leave and get a cup of coffee, because despite Andrew Wyeth's amazing technique, that message just gets worn out. How many times can you look at the cobwebs in the attic and react with any kind of new knowledge?
Right. I had a poster of Wyeth in my dorm room in college. It was Groundhog Day. And I love the precision, the detail, the wooden sill and the curtains blowing in through the open window, and a stump and an axe outside the window. It was so clear. But it's true, after I sort of figured out what he was doing, the psychodrama, as you put it, I became less interested.
Well, I think that it's very interesting how Wyeth's pictures are often misread, because they really are depressing. But people see like that curtain through the open window, and they completely pass by the mood, and they think, oh, it's a summer day with the breeze going through. They're in Peter's mother's retirement home. There's a painting that's probably one of Wyeth's most famous paintings, and it's a woman in a pink dress on a large brown field, and there's a house at the top of the field, and this woman is sort of reaching up. She's crawling, and she's reaching up towards the house, and I think, what is this doing in a retirement home? It is the most depressing picture. It's of a woman who's crippled. She can't walk. She's crawling. She's not a young woman. She's pretty old, and she can't reach the house. It's the saddest picture. And here it is, thinking, oh, what a nice picture of a woman in a pink dress. So
you do learn, you know, when you look more. With Sally Mann, I started out baffled. But got more interested, and that's where I am now. I find that the more I look, the more I'm seeing. And so I'm willing to remain for a while longer in the non-judgmental stance that it's important to adopt when you encounter a new artist. I'm also kind of betting that I'm going to come around to your doubt, but we'll see.
Well, The photographer Walker Evans, who I mentioned earlier, he photographed Southern churches in the most eloquent, straightforward, dignified way. He once said that he could stand in front of anything. He could stand in front of his image and somebody else could stand right next to him, and at exactly the same moment, with the sun casting the exact same shadows, they each took that picture, and somehow his pictures would have something that the other person's picture wouldn't. It's really mysterious how these pictures are so evocative without any kind of manipulation, or if there is manipulation, you can't tell. So there are some pictures of white churches that Sally Mann put in this collection. And, I mean, after Walker Evans, no one else should even try to photograph white churches in the South. They really shouldn't. And Sally Mann shouldn't either. If she never looked at these pictures, that's no excuse. And Walker Evans didn't have to write anything. Everything he has to say is in the picture. And I believe that that's how it should be. Doing our radio show, we are handicapped by not working in a visual medium. And we do our best to bring you something of that experience, but you have to have that experience yourself. Sally Mann has really one consistent vision over everything.
That's true. Well, those churches, they are different from Walker Evans. They've got a sort of energy bursting out from the sky behind. It's a technique in the exposure. But every artist has a vision.
Well, as hard as it is for me to admit, I'm really most interested in the earlier pictures of the children because they do bring out such paradoxes. Naked children, they're sometimes beautifully posed, they're sensual, they're sometimes smeared with blood or mud or bug bites, or the kids are angry or distrustful. There's the whole range of emotions. Never is a kid just laughing. That never happens. And the references that they have are used well with artistic sensibility. They're not in the spirit of appropriation or quotation. But the pictures of water reflections in this collection, I feel I've seen so many times. I don't know that I really have, but they remind me of the Barbizon French pictures where there's water, very light water, and dark reflections. There's a picture of the river where Emmett Till was thrown, and it's about as eerie as she could make it. But as just a picture, I mean, with some of the kids, there's enough there to make some discoveries. But how long would you really stare at a finely printed picture of dark trees around the water? I think that having that refined sense just isn't enough in those water pictures. They seem too simple. There's a drama of having them be that big.
Yes.
So I want to talk about another photographer who is a friend of Sally Mann's from Danville, Virginia. It's Emmett Gowan, and Emmett Gowan also photographed his wife Edith and their children on their farm. They both, he and Sally Mann, both love nightgowns, and who can blame them? The attitude of the photographs is very different. It's an interesting comparison because Sally Mann sees her children as sexual beings even when they were very young. Gowan collaborated with his wife, Edith, and took pictures of their two sons and of her large family. Edith has got many moods. She ages through the pictures, as their children do. But you never feel manipulated. There's a certain ordinariness, but it also has a mystery, more like Walker Evans. What's the story here? There's a picture of their house on Christmas morning, and all the wrapping paper is filling the whole of the room in their house and the train set. And the wrapping has a certain kind of glow that those gauzy materials have. And the subjects are like Mann's, his family at their house in Lexington, Virginia country. So how are they that different? In 1980, Emmett Gowan received a scholarship from the Seattle Arts Commission, which provided funding for him to travel in Washington and the Pacific Northwest, and beginning with a trip to Mount St. Helens, soon after it erupted, Gowan began taking aerial photographs, and for the next 20 years, he captured mining strips, nuclear testing fields, large-scale agricultural fields, and other scars in the natural landscape. Now, Gowan has acknowledged that the photographs of Eugene Atjeh, Bill Brandt, Walker Evans, Robert Frank, Alfred Stieglitz, and especially Harry Callahan and Frederick Sommer have influenced. And in these photographs, you could see their influences, and it only enhances what you're looking at, especially the photographs of the strip mining and nuclear test sites, because Harry Callahan would, after a while, he would scratch on the film itself and draw on the film. And these have very much the same kind of linear abstraction. Other photographers you might look at in connection with this work and Sally Mann's work are Robert Mapplethorpe, who was also very much censored for his photographs, and Francesca Woodman, who was a young photographer who was fascinated by death and gauzy materials, and she took lots and lots of photographs when she was 22 years old, I believe. She wanted the fame that she felt that she was entitled to. Her parents were both artists, and she went to New York to show them her photographs, and the timing was just a little bit off, because this was a little bit before photographs were accepted as a legitimate art form, and she threw herself off a building and killed herself. So the great thing about this show is that I've opened my mind to Sally Mann's work. There really are some pictures that stay with me and will stay with me, and along with answering the questions of myself, and that's plenty. So I want to thank Bobby Hill, as usual, for your generosity in helping this show, make this show. And Tom will be back in 2 weeks. And we don't know what we're going to do, so we will surprise you with another great show. So goodbye from me.
And goodbye from me.
See you later. This is WOWD Tacoma Park.
Glory, glory. Hallelujah. When I lay my burden down. Glory, glory. Hallelujah, when I lay my burden down, I'm gonna meet my dear old mother when I lay my burden down. I'm gonna meet my dear old mother, with a lame burden down. Glory, glory, hallelujah, when I lay my burden down. Hallelujah, when I lay my burden down.